Welcome to Digging the Dharma, where we dig into the Buddhist Dharma and explore ways to bring these 2,500-year-old teachings into our lives. I'm Doug Smith of Doug's Dharma on YouTube and the online Dharma Institute.
And I'm John Aaron, teacher at New York Insight Meditation Center and mindfulness-based stress reduction teacher and teacher trainer and founder of Space to Meditate.
Well, hello, John. Hello again. Great to see you. As
good
always.
To see you again. Yes. We're laughing because we just saw each other 10 minutes ago. But
yeah, a few minutes,
you know,
yeah.
We have to pretend otherwise.
It's still good to see you.
It's all make-believe. But yes, it is good to see you.
Dealing with a philosophical topic today, I think.
Exactly. And it reminds me of, I think it's the, it's one of the shows, the late night shows. They record two shows in one day and, you know, they have to pretend it's the next day, even though it's the same day.
That's anyway, how all these things are done.
I know, it's true. I've just never been part of it, and it just seems so.
it's like being on stage. It's like being an actor.
It seems so constructed.
It does. Well, we were talking about authenticity. You know, this
exactly.
Is
kinda, yes.
You know, if you're going to be an actor, you got to be inauthentic right. To a certain extent because you got to right. Keep up the the fakeness of being.
So we've just broken the
fifth wall. What is
the
it?
The fifth wall, right? By admitting.
Or fourth wall? Is it the fourth wall?
I don't know. I can't
it's
remember.
It's going to be the fourth wall.
Fourth actually. Wall, yeah.
Fifth wall.
Anyway.
Weird. The up or down.
And yeah, so where are we today?
Free will, I think, is what we're talking
free
about.
Free will. Oh my gosh. Okay. Is there free will?
That's a topic that we dealt with a lot when I was doing my PhD in philosophy. So yeah. Big topic. Gets a lot of people interested.
Is there free will? And if there is,
mm-hmm. What is it?
Yeah. So you start.
Oh boy. Okay. Yeah. Well, so just as background, philosophically, at least in the sort of Western tradition, they're understood to be two sort of basic ideas of free will. The first is known as libertarian free will, which is the one we sort of all probably think of when we think of free will, which is this idea that our will, in order to be free, has to be able to act outside of causes and conditions. That in order for us to be able to act freely, we have to be able to act in ways that are absolutely uncaused by anything that came before. So that everything could have been the same before, but we could have acted in various different ways. That's what it is to be free, according to the libertarian idea of free will. And this idea became particularly important in Western theology because it seems to let God off the hook for all the bad things that humans do. It's like, okay, yeah, God is responsible for setting the world up, but, you know, he could set everything up anyway, and still we could act differently, and that's what it is for humans to have free will. Okay, then there's a separate idea of free will that comes out of Western philosophy, which is known as compatibilist free will, which says that free will is actually compatible with determinism. In particular, it really says that in order for the will to be free, it has to be determined. Because in order for us to do what we wish, that's because we've had certain experiences. You know, the mm-hmm. reason that I want to go to the store tomorrow to buy food is because I've had a previous experience with that store in the past, and because I'm hungry, there's, you know, causes and conditions with my stomach that's telling me that it's time to buy food. And so it's because of my history that I have the ability to be free in what I choose. Now, there's all kinds of other questions that come up, which we could get into, but that's the basic structure. Now, I have to say that in early Buddhism, the Buddha clearly believe that we were free in the sense that a number of his competitors did not believe that we were free, believe that everything that we did was determined, and so therefore we were fatalistically required to do what we did, and there was nothing that we could do to our practice to change anything. And the Buddha was very, very negative about those kinds of opinions.
Sure, yeah.
On the other hand, the Buddha never really saw free will as an issue. He never discussed it as such. He never gave a response. Perhaps he considered it an unanswered question. There's no way to know because he didn't talk about it. But nevertheless, certainly seems to have believed that free will was essential. The other fact that I have to get into here is that free will is sort of an essential part of ethics. That if, insofar as we do not believe that there is such a thing as free will, it's hard to make sense of anything ethically. Because in order for us to be responsible, ethically responsible, we have to have had some freedom to choose, in some sense of freedom. If we, as some people say, some people will argue we do not have free will. And usually they do so by saying that libertarian free will doesn't make any sense and that they don't want to accept compatibilism. And so therefore, we have no free will and therefore we're not responsible for what we do. And usually what follows from that is that ethics is basically meaningless because, and that was the views of the people that the Buddha didn't agree with.
Didn't agree with, right.
So that's, I guess, background.
Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, it's a question of like, one could say, well, we believe we have choices and choices are made, right? The choices are made due to causes and conditions.
Right.
And some of them are obvious and some of them aren't. So the other context in Buddhism would be the responsibility of karma in all of this, right? And so, you know, if we believe in the notion of karmic seeds, which are you know, continually planted, for lack of a better verb, in the consciousness or the unconsciousness, you know, but they've sprout up. And when a karmic seed sprouts up, it's likely to be either a wholesome karmic seed or an unwholesome karmic seed. At that moment that it sprouts up, we have a choice, right? To either recognize it as unwholesome and not act on it, or recognize it as wholesome and possibly act on it. The question is, what goes into that choice, I suppose, right? Part of that would be a sense of ethical behavior, but part of it may be completely unrelated, right? And some of it may not be related to choice, you know, but it's like, oh, it's such a deeply embedded karmic pattern that we act on it even when it's ethically unskillful, unwholesome, right? Which I suppose is in a way, you know, when we hear about these awful incidents where someone says, well, God told me to do this, right? What is that really saying? It's like, you know, there's this pattern that was, you know, embedded in this particular being and, you know, he or she acted in a particular way as if they had no control.
Right. It's also important, I think, to say on the side that the Buddha did not believe that everything we do is determined by karma. Because one of the very famous suttas where he says, you know, not everything you experience is due to karma. Some of it is just, you know, random stuff, basically. You know, you get sick because, sometimes you get sick because of karma, but sometimes you get sick because you just ate the wrong thing, you know.
Well, and also it's like the nature of the world, the natural world, you know, we don't.
Right, right. But what he's saying is it's not like, some people will think of karma as a kind of deterministic force that determines everything that we do. And that was not the Buddha's view.
Yeah. And we need the wisdom to see that.
Right.
Right. And so the free will and it, I mean, I guess I just don't like the term free will. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a sense in which I would think that if the Buddha were alive today, he might look at the debates about free will and say, it's just one of these unanswered questions that it's better not to concern yourself with too much. But it does come in with the question of responsibility. You know, what makes us responsible in certain circumstances and not responsible in others. I mean, sometimes we do things that are, let's say, unskillful, but we're not really responsible for having done them because we were, let's say, compelled to do them by some outside force. You know, somebody has a gun to our head. You know, there's lots of kinds of examples you can come up with about this. And within, you know, certainly within the legal system, there's a big difference between, you know, responsibility of certain actions that makes you legally responsible versus other ones where you're not. Let's say you're mentally ill. You're not responsible for what you're doing. You're under the, you know, you've taken some drug and it's made you crazy, and you're not responsible at that case. You may be responsible for taking the drug, but not
right. Exactly. Yeah.
So there's, you know, this is where it comes up. this body may be doing things, but I may not be ethically responsible for what it does, because I was not, you know, there wasn't anybody home at the time that the body was, you know, flailing around, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And hopefully one of the points of our practice is to act in a way where that doesn't, you know, if at all possible, where that doesn't happen.
Right.
But as you said, I mean, there are certain conditions which arise, which we have absolutely no control over. And so we respond in a particular way. And it's interesting. I mean, you know, I don't think either. Well, and, you know, I suppose in some cases, I mean, when we had a conversation, I think, a number of podcasts ago about courage. There are when things arise and one has to act in a particular way in order to save a life, or one has to harm someone in order to save mm-hmm. another, or one has to potentially harm themselves in order to save another, you know. Are we aware of what's going on in those moments? Or are we just reacting in those moments to the situation? And I suspect that's the case, that we're reacting without necessarily dropping down and saying, is this, you know, skillful or not? We're just we're reacting to our own common goodness, I think, mm-hmm. Or innate goodness. And so there really isn't free will in that moment. We're just, there's a reaction, you know, for whatever reason. At the same time, you know, we are practicing to cultivate a really deep sense of ethics and ethical behavior. We are practicing to see clearly and to act from a place of wisdom, to know, you know, when karma is at play, you know, or what the karmic seeds are that are arising, or to know why a particular choice is being made. You know, and is the choice arising from wisdom, or is the choice arising from just some reactivity?
Right. And this gets into another, I think, really deep topic when it comes to free will with Buddhism, which is that the Buddha described the goal of practice, in a sense, as the goal of freedom, by which he meant freedom from certain kinds of unskillful compulsions. In particular, the unskillful compulsions of greed, hatred, and delusion.
Right. Yeah.
And so I think one way to talk about free will in a Buddhist context, which is somewhat, I think, akin to a compatibilist way of looking at things, is to say that we aren't free in our ordinary lives insofar as we're being compelled by these unskillful tendencies.
Right.
But that the aim of practice is to get ourselves to a position where we are truly free, in the sense that what we do is not compelled by these unskillful tendencies, but is just arising from the more skillful way that we should be acting.
From wisdom, yeah.
From wisdom, right, exactly. Yeah. And that is the kind of freedom that the Buddha was really after. And in that sense, he might say, you know, that the average person really isn't free most of the time, but that the Arahant is free all the time, because right. They're not acting from compulsion in this sense of compulsion, being compelled by these kinds of unskillful tendencies.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, our practice is starting to see those unskillful tendencies very clearly, and it's like, yikes.
Yeah.
And yet at that level of freedom of, say, an Arahant or just a fully awakened being, I wonder. Well, the thought of free will doesn't exist, because the thought of acting unskillfully also doesn't exist. I mean, it's just, that's gone, right? So there's just, it's not anybody being free. It's just...
Right, that's true.
Right? So who's having the free will?
Sure.
And, you know, it's this is where it gets really interesting. And it's like, and if we look at our own experience, right? Where in some instances there's a kind of naturalness or a flow to the way we are experiencing life. In those moments, there's not an experience of choice being made, but simply an unfolding of whatever is unfolding, and a seeing that clearly as let's say, appropriate response. I mean, it's just, you know, every moment is responded to appropriately from that place of wisdom and insight, right? Just seeing clearly. And in those moments where we fall into old habits, we see that clearly. And then, you know, we have an opportunity to rectify the situation. And that's a choice, right? So, yeah, it's really interesting when we think about, well, when one is fully awake, there's no one to have free will.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
There is just...
Well, there isn't one to have free will either case. I mean, even if you're not awake, but
that's true.
You don't see
yes,
it.
You don't see it. And it's, you know, because normally our will is determined by this strong sense of self, mm-hmm. and that strong sense of a need to defend or, you know, progress or whatever.
Yeah. Well, it's along the, yeah. I mean, the whole chain of dependent origination, which is really, I mean, the sort of heart of the Buddha's causal picture, and you right. could say, somewhat deterministic, well, not completely, but somewhat deterministic picture of how, well, I mean, you could say it different ways. How dukkha arises is one way to look at it. How our sense of self arises from our experience is another way to look at it. There's many ways to look at that, but that is a picture of a kind of compulsion that we ordinarily undergo, that our mind is here and arises, and we experience things in the world, and they cause us to have certain kinds of experiences that cause attachment and clinging and mm-hmm. and this whole sense of self that causes dukkha. And then, you know, the question then comes up, how do we break out of that systemic compulsion? How do we break out of that causal picture? Clearly there's a way.
How do you do it, Chuck? No, well, I mean, that's the seeing, right?
Yeah.
It's like seeing, oh, because of this, that's happening.
You know? Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, we create these formations, we create these constructions, and, you know, we are responding in particular ways that we think those responses, the response to something that's pleasant or unpleasant creates a certain flow of thoughts, which then creates a certain reaction. And once we obviously see what's happening clearly, then at least momentarily we break through that mm-hmm. and are no longer pushed around by these causes. And then there's the rest of our life when we are. And it's like, oh, wait a minute. I thought I had free will, but no, it's, you know, it's this. No, it's that. No, it's, you know, it's like, so yeah, I think that's really an interesting way of seeing it, that true free will,
in or true sense, freedom anyway, yeah.
is true freedom, and there's no will involved in a sense.
Yeah, in a sense, right? Yeah.
There is just appropriate response, to put it in Zen terms. You know, it's like everything is responded to from a place of seeing the truth, and that's really interesting. And I think that it's, again, it's always worth investigating those moments where we have those feelings, where we have that sense that there is no one doing this. It's just doing. And then, you know, when we look back at those moments where we are deeply, well, chained by dependent, you know, by the links of dependent origination, is that the right image? We are held.
Sure, held in the chain, yes, or dependent, okay. Whatever. However,
yeah,
you want to put
yeah.
it.
So, you know, and it's like, you know, like, how do I get out of here?
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, well, see it.
Yeah.
And
really see it. Yeah. Which is hard. Which is,
well, it's, yes, it is hard, or at least it's hard to sustain.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because our habits are so strong.
Yeah.
And in a sense, we are controlled by our habits.
Mm-hmm.
And our habits identify us, and we think we have free will, but actually, no, we're being, you know, controlled by those habits.
Mm-hmm.
And until we sort of see that clearly, first in little ways and then in much bigger ways, you know, until that's seen clearly, we're never free.
Yeah. I mean, we have a kind of freedom, the freedom of responsibility, but mm-hmm. we don't have true freedom. You know,
right.
We don't have real freedom in a sense. Yeah, I mean, it's, and there's a, I guess, Yeah, I mean, it's a big topic because it is so integrated into ideas of responsibility, of what we are karmically responsible for, ethically responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't really get ourselves out of our responsibility by saying, you know, I was compelled by anger. Well, I mean, that's life, you know.
Yeah, fascinating. So it's a rich place
that yeah.
we're working in here. And
I guess the one thing I would add is just that insofar as we're talking about the chain of dependent origination, I think the place that the Buddha usually pointed to that we could break that chain was in between the feeling, that is the positive, the pain and the pleasure,
yeah.
and the craving.
For separation, yeah.
Yeah, it's that link there between the...
Yeah.
Which is where the Buddha seems to believe there was a little bit of a weakness that we could...
Well, it's also the place where we actually have a little space.
Exactly.
You know, because the between form and feeling and mm-hmm. it's like nothing. It happens so quickly.
Right.
You know, so, and it's usually not until we actually recognize the all the formations happening until we see that, you know, we can be in the midst of it and stop it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether we stop it before it happens is another matter. But when we actually say, wait a minute, you know, and this actually goes back to the, and I didn't bring this up in our last recording, you know, this actually also comes in to the notion of truthfulness because we get stuck in that cycle, in that papancha, you know, and we think that's true until we say, wait a minute, is it? Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And a lot of the stuff that our mind throws out is just papancha. It's just
Well, most of it.
Chatter.
And it's like, oh, okay, wait a minute. And then we stop and we look closely. And we drop, you know, we just at least for a moment drop into silence and see what arises. Easier said than done when you're in the midst of it, of course.
Yeah.
But knowing that's the pattern, you know, we can start to make changes.
Yeah,
and this is really what formal practice is all about.
You know, yeah, I mean, if you have the skill to be able to drop into formal practice and have the papancha stop, then you're lucky. Then you're pretty advanced.
Well, it's not that the papancha stops, but you don't pay any attention to it.
It's hard. It's you know, because it pulls you along. That's the thing, you know.
Well, yes, and I mean, you know, you know, the it's like the radio playing in the background half the time. You can choose to listen to it or not. You know, in those moments where you realize that you're stuck in the middle of it, it's not like you can just say stop, but you can like create a space around it where it isn't so loud. And then in that space, oh, you know, this is, there is a choice here.
Yeah. You know? I mean, this is where, back to the idea of compulsion, really, because I think my experience with papancha and these kinds of states, anger, hatred, whatever, is that they compel, you know. I mean, and what samadhi, the whole point of meditation, of calming the mind is to weaken that compulsion a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
just to begin over time and practice and months, that compulsion begins to weaken a little bit. And now it's still there in certain times and places, but you know, that's because otherwise, you know, one can talk about getting quiet, but then the ordinary person in the ordinary time, you get quiet and it's just, you know, the papancha is right there and does its job, and the quiet just makes things worse in a sense. I mean, or at least it doesn't help unless you've had the practice beforehand.
Well, right? Yeah, right. You need the practice. I mean, it's you need to see that for what it is. But yes, it's in that moment that actually the chain can be at least temporarily broken. And then we just go back to what is actually felt. And that's where appropriate response comes, I think. So, yeah, great.
Yeah. Well, I'm sort of feeling compelled to have some coffee. What about you?
I knew that was going to come up. I'm not sure about the free will here.
No.
This is like, it's time for a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
It's
that caffeine, you know, again.
Yes. It's the, I don't want to say drug of choice, but it's certainly one of the addictive things in this nature.
Yeah. At least it's supposed to be.
But it's good for you.
Yeah. Or you can have decaf if you want. So.
anyway. Yes. Yeah, so if you'd like to help us with that, if you'd like to help us with our little
compulsions,
the conditions of our life, you can do that by buying us a coffee on digginthedharma.com and supporting the show. And please, while you're doing that, leave a comment.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we always like being wrong or being...
Hearing other viewpoints.
Hearing other viewpoints and opinions and, being contested. We love it. And we'll even respond back. So thank you for listening and...
Keep digging the Dharma.
Digging the Dharma. Okay. Be well.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review on your podcast directory. And please check us out at digginthedharma.com, where you can leave a comment, buy us a coffee, and even become a member. You can find out more about me, John Aaron, at johnaaron.net, and Doug at dougsdharma.com. Thank you.